Welcome to the WWE Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian Seawood, and oh hell yeah, it is WrestleMania. Joining me on WrestleMania Saturday night is not Pat McAfee, although that would be cool. Instead, it is the one, the only, the indefinitely cool
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to a weird, wild, and wacky night in the world of professional wrestling. So Chad, WWE WrestleMania Night 1 has commenced, and it has finished. Your overall thoughts on the production and the value and the matches of WrestleMania 39 Part 1?
I can say that this was a top to bottom, a good to great show. I don't think there were no dud matches. Everything was paced well. Like, I just looked at the match times, and all the matches were kind of evenly spread. Everybody got around the same amount of time, except for the two main events, which got a little bit longer. But everything was comparable, and given the time,
including our surprise match.
That had to happen because, you know, you had to cool the crowd down to get the crowd back up. So, you know, that's why that happened. Which, it was a surprise, but while I'm watching it happen, I'm like, oh, I know exactly why this is happening. It makes sense. And that's kind of the thing. Everything about this show so far made sense. It made sense. It was executed well from booking perspective, storyline perspective, and then in-match, in-ring performance perspective. Like, those last two matches were excellent. So far, WrestleMania has been a winner. Tomorrow, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow when we get there. I do expect to have a dud of a match show up tomorrow because Omos is in a match. But for this night, they're hitting all balls and strikes. Everything went great.
Yeah, and I think, like, you said this on our Royal Rumble podcast, and you reiterated it again on our Elimination Chamber podcast. Which is, yes, we're old, which is that, you know, sometimes chalk is good. And if you go back and you listen to our preview podcast, which Chad expertly posted for me today, you know, we pretty much called it by the book. I mean, there were no swerves, there were no surprises. The one match on this card you would have said would have had a surprise would have been the 6-woman tag match. And that, you know, went by the book. Trish looked great, and she didn't turn. So, like, pretty much everything went by the book.
I think the only thing we didn't get right was Ray and Dominic. Because I think we both said Ray would put Dominic over. But Ray won, and, you know, it still feels fine. Nothing's...
They did it in the right way because they took the chain away at the end. So, like... In a way, you're just setting up, you know, a potential match against Bad Bunny at Backlash, where he's
right. That's exactly what I was thinking when, because I forgot we were going to Puerto Rico, but they showed it right after that match. I'm like, oh, okay, this can make sense. So yeah,
the first WWE pay per view or premium live event to emanate from Puerto Rico since New Year's Revolution.
Oh, I didn't think we had one before that, but that. That's cool. That's cool. They
New Year's Revolution 2006, I want to say.
I'd be lying if I tried to guess.
So, what was your spot of the night? What was the thing that caught your attention the most?
Let me see. Oh, never mind. I don't know why I'm thinking that hard. It's the damn Charlotte spot where she landed on her face. Because I still don't know if that was supposed to happen. Or what? It looked like...
There's absolutely no way that was supposed to happen. That is too close to an Owen Hart spot. You don't do that anymore.
So I'm trying to figure out what was supposed to happen. The way she went over, it seemed like a spot where she's supposed to land on her feet. But in watching it, because they did show it again in slow motion, there was no way she was ever landing on her feet. So I don't know. Maybe she was supposed to take the flip and land just like flat on her chest, but didn't make it all the way over and landed. I mean, it could have been worse. It could have been the top of her head, but her face literally just smashed into the mat. And I was like, oh, that's a rough one.
Oh, you're talking about honorable that mention. I thought you were talking about the ending spot where she hit face planted onto the turnbuckle, not the turnbuckle, the thing that holds the ropes up. Like, that's what Owen hit on his way down.
Did she hit that?
Yeah, she hit the ring post at the end. She didn't hit the turnbuckle.
Hit the ring post. Yeah.
Went completely limp, my first thought goes to Owen Hart because I'm old. And I'm like, is she dead?
I knew that. I figured that one was supposed to happen. I think she caught it. You know, I think the hand came down first, but she was real quick about it. But yeah, she did really go limp. But as soon as Rhea got up there and she started moving, I'm like, okay, this was supposed to happen. But it was just the
botched, the botched spot with the where Corey Graves points out the brush burn on her nose afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never know, but yeah, her face isn't supposed to meet the mat. Even in the slow mo, because I wasn't quite sure how she landed. I knew it was somewhere. I wasn't sure she landed in like her forehead. I was like, she couldn't have landed on top of her head. And then the slow mo was like, oh, she landed dead on her face. And then yeah, that's where the brush burn came from. But she seemed to be, you know, okay. It wasn't like bleeding anything. So
no, it bled afterwards.
Yeah,
like as the match went on, it started to bleed. But like, that's not the worst botch of you know in that spot.
No, it could have been worse, and it worked out ultimately. I think it was I actually think it was a good visual, especially if she was all right.
Yeah, it definitely did. My spot of the evening goes to one, the only Braun Strowman, for a match that is supposed to be a cool down bathroom break match, to have the high flying Otis and the high flying Braun Strowman take to the air was just fantastic, sir. A much better match than it had any right to be
in. Well, all the people involved in that match said, y'all call this a showcase, we're going to give you a showcase. And my spot from that match is actually on Braun's second go-around when Dawkins de-cleats him, like, legitimately. The only way to get that done is to legitimately de-cleat him. And he did. And it was like, I physically jumped and yelled when I saw him de-cleat Braun. I'm like, oof! And it goes to my thinking that Angelo Dawkins is completely underrated and they should not brush him to the side whenever they let Ford go off solo.
I agree. I mean, the other thing from that match I get is the electric chair spot, which was just so dangerous.
That was cool, too. That was cool. They did a really good job. Like, that match really should have been a nothing match, but nah, I was entertained top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, they, like, for a match that is supposed to be a cool-down, like, bathroom break match to turn into a high-flying literal showcase was very impressive.
Right.
So let's go through the night as it came. So, for me, the most disappointing match of the night was Cena versus Austin Theory, which started off the night because John, a little rusty.
I can't say. I mean, I guess it was the worst match of the night. And if that's the worst match of the night, you're pretty much okay for the rest of the show. I mean, yeah, he's rusty. He had a match last year in December in which he got in for all of about 2 minutes, did three moves, and the show was over. So this effectively, he hasn't wrestled in like 2 years. So yeah, you can expect a little rust, but that match was what I thought it would be, what it should have been. It's one of the shorter matches of the night. It was longer than the showcase match, but I think everything else beats it in terms of time. But yeah, what shocked me was it felt like Cena's last match, like his little acknowledgement in the middle of the match. It just felt like it was him saying, "This is it. See y'all when I see you." I didn't expect that, but I very well expected Cena to put Theory over.
Do you expect the Mike Tyson biting?
No, but it was something new from Theory, and I guess it kind of made him seem a little edgier. He needed to do something new and something more, you know, something underhanded like that fits into who he is and how this match is supposed to play out for him. But no, I didn't think I was going to see Bitey once, let alone twice, and even in the same match.
I mean, my thing was, like, they booked him very similar to how, you know, I've watched 17 over and over and over again. Like, it took, like, we were kind of questioning why Austin was doing some of the things he was doing up until the point where he hit the $1 million dream. Like, once he put the $1 million dream submission on, then we were like, oh, he's pulling out that. So that means he's a heel now. Like, I kind of felt that way about Theory, where Theory's, like, literally biting and low-blowing and doing every heel move available to put himself over. And the announcers are really working the angle that, like, he's going to do anything he can to get over him. And so, for me, it was much more of, like, okay, so this is the route they're going. Like, he has to cheat to get over him. Which is fine, because like Cena said, he has to face the Monday night crowd, which will work out awesome for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's my biggest thing with this match is, did it work to get people to buy into Theory even more? I don't know if it did. And if that didn't work, I don't know what you do to get people to get to the point where you want them to be. But apparently in the arena, the whole match went over really, really well. People were really, there was a lot of heat for Theory. So now it's just a matter of making that translate.
Yeah, translate that from SoFi, which is 75,000, to the Staples Center, which is like, what, 18,000?
Something like that, yeah.
I also love the fact that that Michael Cole also acknowledged that WrestleMania has gone Hollywood before tonight. So that was fun.
I mean, they can't run away from it. It's, we know, like, it's, they've run, those promos are the exact same as the promos they were in the last time.
The set is the exact same.
See, I don't remember what the set looked like.
The set was the marquee. They changed out the marquee for every match.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. So, it wasn't that long ago, but.
It was 18 years, according to Cole. It was old enough 18. For it to be a high school senior.
So 18. I guess that's right.
It was what, 21? 21 or 23? 18,
probably 21. Yeah, it has been 21. Because we're 20. We're on 39 now. So yeah, it would have been 21. Yeah, that's 4 years. Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
The only reason I know that is because he said it during the Trish spot, where Trish was wearing the same, a modified version of the costume that she wore. The last time WrestleMania went Hollywood, which was WrestleMania 22.
My big thing now is, I doubt we get Cena on Raw, but I kind of would like to, you know, I want him to say, like, you know, I'm done, because it really, they feel like he's done. Maybe he.
When you do the hands together bow during the five knuckle shuffle, you're pretty much acknowledging to the crowd that this is a thank you.
This is it, yeah.
So after that came the what we thought was a bathroom break and turned out to be a high-flying misadventure.
It was really fun because all the things that showcase match, all the things that I thought I would end up doing during this match, I ended up doing during the triple threat, the six-woman tag match. Because I really was about to get up, and then the Street Profits came out, and I was like, I'll see what they do for a little while. And then I watched the whole match. And I enjoyed everything about it.
They couldn't get people like go-karts or anything to get down to the ramp. Like, come on now. That's a long-ass ramp.
But they've done longer.
Have they, though?
Like, Yeah. Now, I have to be fair. In me saying that they've done longer, it may have felt like it was longer because we have people like The Undertaker that had to stroll down. Hey.
To be fair, anytime there was a long ramp, Taker got pushed middle way up.
And not always. Some, like, when they first started doing those real long ramps, he would have to walk, and then they were like, okay, old ass can't do it. we'll give him halfway. And it still took forever. Like tomorrow? Because Roman, if you ever needed to see what a definition of saunter is, that's what Roman does. So it takes him 5 minutes to get to the ring on SmackDown with that little bitty ramp. So we're looking at a 15-minute entrance tomorrow just for him. I'm almost tempted to time it, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be really, really stupid long. But I'm okay with that. But yeah, this ramp, it was like, it's borderline on the way too long. Like, it's long, but it's borderline on the way too long. The only reason I say it's not is because Cena still ran to the ramp, and it didn't feel like it took forever, and it didn't feel like he would be out of breath. And like, the Street Profits ran to the ramp. It's a little bit longer than, it's longer than normal, but not like obnoxious long.
I was at 33. That 33 is a very long ramp.
See, that's what I think, that I can't remember which one I thought was just like, oh my god, this is like,
I mean, the Rumble ramp. The Rumble ramp this year was very long.
It was. I think the Rumble ramp was longer than this one.
But I mean, overall, I think it was a really surprising match. Like, that they used the ropes as much as they did, that they used the spots as much as they did, that they very literally put on a show.
Yeah. They took the showcase serious, and everybody got a chance to be highlighted. It all made sense. And in the end, the way they talked about it, they were saying that they were trying to angle this as, you know, the winner has a good shot at the tag title. So now we have a new set of contenders for a new set of champions.
Yeah, no getting over on the Street Profits.
Oh, before we go to the next match, because I'm looking at Twitter and it reminded me, do you have any thoughts that the show opened with Kevin Hart opening for WrestleMania?
My thoughts are the man could not host the Oscars, but he can host WrestleMania.
So what made me remember that on Twitter is that Dwayne is on Twitter right now. Well, he tweeted something out in his workout stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's right. Kevin Hart opened the show. Is this a sign? Or is this an early flare that we might see Dwayne tomorrow? I don't think so, but I mean, know people
I'm on record with our preview podcast as saying how I think the main event ends. I think the main event involves Dwayne, but like, my first thought when I see Kevin Hart opening the show is that guy had to resign from hosting the Oscars.
I forgot that he did that too. Yeah.
Well, that's how we ended up with our
hostless first show. Yeah.
Hostless Oscars was that they'd hired him and then the backlash started and he didn't handle it well. And then they didn't have a backup plan.
I forgot it. But anyway.
But yes, Kevin Hart and The Rock are very good friends. So what do you make of the six-woman tag that put Lita and Becky and Trish over with no heel turn?
Nope, we skipped a match.
Which match was that?
That would be Seth freaking Rollins.
Oh, the Logan Paul match. Logan Paul match that included a mascot version of his energy drink being frog splashed into a table.
Right. So I'll start by saying, when you send a mascot out to the ring with one of the wrestlers, you know that they're going to be involved with the match and that they're probably somebody that's of note. In this particular case, the person of note is a person I have no idea who he is because he's from Logan Paul's orbit. I have no idea who this dude is. Fine.
Apparently a boxer / YouTube influencer.
Like his partner, whatever. But you know, his spot with the table was, it was cool and creative. I didn't see it coming, but I kind of saw how they were going to get there. Logan Paul's. So anytime anybody in WWE does an entrance that involves them being higher than 5 feet off the ground, I automatically think Owen. There's just no way I could not think about Owen. And so when I see them do those things,
older than us, they just think Sean.
In this particular instance, it's the exact same thing Sean did, except a lot faster. Sean did it a lot faster.
Well, it was about what they were trying to do with Owen. It was both zipline things. It's just...
Well, no, his wasn't a zipline. It was a drop down. And, okay, this is a quick aside because I heard it on the podcast. So the whole thing with Owen was they basically like set up a fault. The rig was set up to be faulty in the first place because Vince, much like when Logan came down, he was in all that gear, and as soon as he came down, that's when the little crayon looking drink came out, and you didn't see Logan on camera because they were unhooking him from all that gear. Vince did not want that. He wanted Owen to drop and be able to get out of the thing quick. He didn't want it to be like, because at the same time, this is around time Sting was dropping down. And when Sting would drop down, they'd have to take all that stuff off him and everybody else would have to kind of wait. So there's nobody beating his ass while he's all strapped in the gears. Vince didn't like that. Vince didn't want that. So they set this rig up that didn't have the extra supports and didn't have all the gear to tie him in. So when I see anybody in WWE do this stuff, the first thing I notice is all the gear they're in. It should be safe, but I'm going to always think of Owen. I know, especially now, the people in charge will not put somebody in that position. I think now people will not want to put themselves in that position, so they would never do it and not be safe. But it's always going to, you know, it always comes to mind in these situations.
The most unbelievable thing in the world is that they finished a paper. Like, there was the man's brain matter was on the mat, and they made everybody finish the show.
Yeah, that is not one of Vince's finest moments, but, you know, he's kind of a dirtbag, so.
I mean, whenever I see anybody attempt that, that's first thing that comes to my mind is Owen or Shawn. And WrestleMania 10 was, like, a great entrance.
Yeah.
And a great match. Yes. And this was a really good match. I was just surprised that, like, they went as long as they did.
Yeah, they went, 16 minutes? I think it felt maybe like a minute or two too long, but that's about what I expected.
Well, the booking for the entire show was really nice. Like, the flow into those last two matches seemed really quick. Like, nothing seemed to drag. Nothing seemed like it was, like, drawing out longer than it was supposed to. You remember that? Remember that promo that Rock and Triple H did with Ronda Rousey back at WrestleMania 31 that was strictly designed to, like, buy time for it to turn dark so that they could do the Taker intro for his match with Bray? Like, there wasn't anything like that. There was nothing that felt extraneous or felt too long. Even the surprise spot with McAfee, none of it felt like exceedingly long or drawn out.
Yeah, the actual match with Miz and McAfee, which we'll get to in a minute, it was only like 3.5 minutes.
7 to 11 Central Time is a really good pace. Like, considering how long these things can actually be, 7 to 11 Central Time is a good pace.
Yeah, I would think they would want it to be like 30 minutes shorter. But the way this one was paced out with all the things that were involved, I think you could have a 4-hour show and get away with it.
Better than two 4-hour shows than 1 8-hour show. I've sat in the arena for two of those. They aren't fun. Like, you lose your energy at a certain point.
Yeah, the crowd can't keep up. It is draining to be there. I know some people that have never been don't get that. But, like, yeah, every time somebody comes out, you're interacting and reacting and stuff, and do that for over 3 hours.
Yeah, consider that your normal WWE premium live event will run you 3 hours total from bell to bell. And this is going to be like 4.5, almost 5 hours, like, from the time the gates open to the time the final bell rings.
Right.
Like, and then you have to get up and do it again the next morning, the next day.
Yeah.
And there were people who went to the NXT Stand and Deliver and then walked across the street and went to the and then went to Mania.
Insane. Yeah, that's what people don't factor in. It's not just the show time. You have to get there, you have to get in, you have to get situated. And if you're getting there, most people, if you've done this before and want to be, like, really situated, you're getting there an hour before. So that all adds up to, like, 7-hour day.
When I went to Mania in Orlando, we got there at 4 local time. We didn't leave till 11 local time. Got back to the hotel about midnight.
Yeah.
That's a long day, sir.
Yes, it is.
Same thing with Mania in New Orleans. Like, even though it's an hour and a half down the road, like, you still had to get there at, like, 4 o'clock Central Time. You got done about 11 o'clock Central Time, 10:30 Central Time, and then you had to wait in traffic and get home, yeah. Drive the 90 minutes home, so you got home about 1:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
The craziest thing I've ever done is the Royal Rumble right before COVID hit, where I got up early in the morning on that Sunday, drove to Houston, took a nap in the Bucky's parking lot, got up, drove to Minute Maid, got lunch at Cracker Barrel, then drove to Minute Maid and was there when the gates opened at 3 o'clock local time. And then went through the show all the way to 10:30, 11 o'clock local, and then drove back to Baton Rouge and got up for work the next
day. Yeah, don't do that again. That was insane.
Well, I didn't have a friend who lived in Houston at the time, so no. So what do you make of the 6-woman tag match? I mean, we all thought this was leading to something, and it may lead to something on Raw on Monday, but, like, you know, this seemed pretty much by the book.
Right. Yeah, I thought we'd get something. You know, we talked about it. We talked the thought of Trish turning was something that came up. But no, this was a straight, you know, match. And you have the belts on Becky and Lita, and Trish is back for like her first match in a while. It makes sense for them to win. But on the flip side, what do you do with Damage Control? Because all they've done is lose for like the past few months. And even though, I mean, Io and Sky had the titles, and they just lost them last month. Bayley has been losing since she came back. She hasn't really won anything since she came back. So why are they a faction? Why are these other two women following her when she can't win anything? And it looks like she's holding them back. But I would think it's too soon to break them up. It hasn't even been a year, and I think you can do things with them, but just the way booking has gone, it has put them into a bad spot. So, again, nothing wrong with the match. Nothing wrong with the result. It's just, you know, now it's like more Fallout stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you get, in my mind, you spend Raw setting up Damage Control imploding.
But that makes sense, except, you could do it. But the whole imploding thing, when we're pretty much thinking that the Bloodline is going to implode over the next few weeks too, starting tomorrow night. Probably started tonight, and it's going to like explode tomorrow night and then carry on to whatever they're going to do. So it's just doing two very similar things on the same show at the same time. It's kind of,
Does anybody really care about Damage Control the way they care about the Bloodline?
They don't, but that's part of the problem, though.
I mean, they've been a faction for, what, since August? And, you know, they haven't really made a huge impact since becoming a faction? And you need number one contenders for the Women's Championship on both shows? And you have a shakeup coming?
It's like, their faction was a good idea. It's just the nature of how the booking has gone has, it necessitated them doing jobs, but in doing so, it made them kind of a non-factor, particularly Bayley. Not Io and Dakota, but by proxy, it's weakened everybody.
Somebody better check on her hotel room in San Clair in L.A. So maybe she's sitting Indian style in front of her room protesting.
She's not gone.
I mean, I love the fact she actually admitted that that's what they did, that they set Indian style in front of their hotel room in New Orleans and protested the fact that they were going to be the first women's tag team champions, that they were going to lose their title like a month after they won it to the Iconics.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, at least she actually admitted that, and at least she at least admitted that, like, Trish and Lita and others, like, felt like that was also wrong.
I mean, there's a point there.
The point that Mercedes Malone is now in New Japan. But let's move on from the ladies of the WWE and move on to our next match, which was Rey versus Dominic. the match that me and you both got wrong and that got super hyped up in a way that was nice, and you involved the ladies of the Mysterio family.
This was the match that won the night for entrances, because Dominic coming out and out of the paddy wagon in chains with a mask on to taunt his dad was high level heel shit. I applaud the level of whoever did that.
You think the boy had been in Sing Sing?
it's so ridiculous, because in storyline he was in a holding cell for 2 hours. That's it, and he turned that into him being this hardened criminal with a tear tattoo, and it's so ridiculous, and that's what makes it so great. Ray coming out with Snoop
the pop for Latino Heat. For Latino Heat was great.
That pop, but I'll start with the Nothing But a G thing, just because I wasn't sure Snoop was driving it at first until I heard the song. I'm like, okay, he's there. This makes sense. And then they go into the Latino Heat, and I know that pop is huge. I said this on Twitter. I'll say it here. I've always hated Ray's shimmy. However, I get it. That's what Eddie did. He just can't do it like Eddie. It always bothers me. But everybody loves Latino Heat, and it was a good way to honor Eddie, which is always cool.
Which is something he did last night as well.
Yeah, I didn't watch the thing, so I don't know what happened. I know that there was part of this angle was shot there, but I don't know what else happened.
I mean, I watched the Hall of Fame ceremony simply for Stacey Keebler's legs, but that's just me.
I almost did, but then I was like, but I'll see her on WrestleMania Sunday, so yeah, no, I'll be all right. And that's what I'm banking on. But but when it came to the match, this was a good match. They got the family involved. They were great. Of course, Judgment Day was involved. We knew that was happening. So we knew Legado del Fantasma, I think. We knew they were going to get involved. All the things we knew were going to happened. It was just that Dom got caught with a chain by Bad Bunny. They're smart, so they're probably planning something with those two in Puerto Rico. And that makes all the sense. So, and that makes it all make sense. So, Ray got the win over his son.
Got the family photo afterwards.
Right, and the fans got to see Dominic get some comeuppance, because they have legitimately hated this guy since he turned.
Yeah, he's had real heat. And, like, Trips and other folks in creative have been very pleased with the way that he's made advancements in terms of his character during this run. I mean, because we're both old and we both yawn at the same time. I mean, like, the Rey Mysterio and Dominic stuff has been as good as the Bloodline stuff over the last 4 months. So, like, that's the kind of quality of stuff they've been doing with that. So it's a good payoff.
I think so. I think it was real good. I enjoyed it. Even if we were wrong, I think they ended up making it into something.
That's well, they right. made it right with the Rhea thing. The Rhea thing, and what I'm pretty sure they're gonna make right with the Edge and Balor thing tomorrow night.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of Rhea, we might as well jump on that one.
Well, I mean, he did show up at ringside, and they did mention the fact that he has a match tomorrow, so.
Yeah, it wasn't until they said it that I realized that the Hell in the Cell wasn't hanging tonight, was it?
Nope.
Okay, so somebody's got some work to do tomorrow, or now, before the show tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I forgot, you know, we're both football fans, but like, I forgot how different that scoreboard setup is from Jerry's. Like, Jerry World has its own distinct setup, but they have a distinct setup at SoFi. Like, that is a true wraparound scoreboard.
Oh yeah, that's right. It'll be something to see how they hang that crap up there. But you know,
I'm sure they've already worked the mechanics out of it. But like, oh still,
they just did.
And the other question for me is where you put that match, because to me, you can't put that match where you put Rhea versus Charlotte tonight.
No, I don't
know. Because we both established these dudes are old. Like a 43-year-old and a 50-year-old in a Hell in a Cell match in which the 50-year-old is talking about the crazy, stupid, insane ideas that he had.
So, off the top of my head, I would probably open with the women's match, with the women's title match. Because they're both strong, and it would be a strong opener. From there,
I think you would do the women's showcase match second, the way you did the men's showcase match second this tonight.
Well, it depends on how you feel about them, and honestly, how I feel about, well, because Ronda's in the match, that might be, because honestly, I would have probably put them, just think about it right now, I would put them in the dead spot before Roman.
You would put them in the Pat McAfee spot.
Yeah. I don't think we need another skit. You could just put a match there. No. I won't do that to them because I think they will be better than Omos and Brock. You put Omos and Brock in the death match because the death spot, because nobody wants to see that shit.
The old man thinks people do.
That don't mean he's right. He's dead ass wrong.
Yeah, please don't put Liv in a dead spot.
I know that's what you feel, but.
She looked very nice tonight in her white puffy dress.
I saw her. Because
promoting a video.
Because Brock and Omos exist, she doesn't have to go to the death spot. I think they need to be in the death spot.
All right. So let's move on. After Ray and Dominic, we get to what is probably the best match of the night.
Right. Rhea and Charlotte. And yeah, I would say it's the best match of the night. The way they laid it out, and it was like a constant progression or a building of intensity to the very end. And it wasn't the way you normally build intensity in the big main events towards the end, where you just start exchanging finishes and kick and near falls off of those finishers. They did their finishers, but I mean, by the nature of Charlotte's, they're more like finished, they're more submission based, but it wasn't just like finisher. It was like they hit a finisher.
She pushed out of the four and the
figure eight
multiple times.
But when they would do one and you would think, okay, so we're in that stretch, but no, then it would build again. And it was nice to see that it ended with not just a straight up finish, I'm just going to keep hitting you with trading finishers and one of us will fall, to them trying more dangerous, outlandish stuff on the top rope, which led to the avalanche riptide to get the win. So I thought that match was really, really something to see. It was a great match. The way the layout was great, and they both were excellent in their roles here.
Halfway through that match, I was thinking that their COVID era WrestleMania 35 match was actually better. But 36. The COVID mania where they faced, I thought that halfway through I was like, that match was a little bit better than this. And then the second half of that match just totally turned me around. The spots, the finish, the kickouts, the submission holds, the overcoming the odds, like, they booked it really, really well and kept the heat and the intensity going throughout, and really just Charlotte and Rhea gave all the physicality you could ever ask for.
Yeah, I have no notes on that one. It was a great match by great performers, and really showed that it's really like the crown jewel of the show, even though we still have a match left and that one is excellent in its own right. It just shows that, you know, following, they have plans and this regime is going by their plans straight away and have laid things out in a way where you get a match like this and it feels like, okay, this match represents this whole show, and this whole show is good.
Yeah, and it gives Rhea the rub and does not diminish Charlotte anymore.
Right, and I will say it was a string of tweets I saw on Twitter was like, this is a star-making performance by Rhea Ripley, and I would agree.
Yeah, that was what Michael Cole was hyping up. Michael Cole was also hyping up the fact that the referee was shit during the during the women's six-man tag, which he's right. That ref was not in position at all at any point in any of the falls of that match. But like, yeah, that was the mood that they were trying to navigate, was that this was a star making moment, a WrestleMania moment for Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like, they did it really well in the fact that Charlotte is not diminished in any way by what happened.
No, but Charlotte's kind of untouchable at this point.
Do you feel she needs to move on to a different promotion in order to cement her legacy?
I don't think so. I don't think you have to do that. I think her legacy is pretty much...
I mean, her dad did. Her dad wrestled for NWA. He wrestled for New Japan. He wrestled for WCW.
Yeah, but it was a different time. There, most of the homegrown talent from WWE, they don't leave to go to other promotions to secure their legacy. They leave out of being unhappy and whatnot.
The two biggest examples you have are Mercedes Malone and Jon Moxley.
Yep, those are the two I was thinking of too. So, I mean, everybody else, if they're homegrown and they're good, they stay. Most of the people they have there now, they grew them themselves and they stay. So I don't think she has to go anywhere. It's a matter of, does she want to? And it's, I mean, why would she want to? Because we all know they're going to give her enough titles to surpass her father, which she's only like two or three throw.
She's at 14. Her father was 16. So she only needs two more runs, and she's in her 30s, man. She isn't even in her, like, 40s or 50s. She's, like, in her 30s.
I mean, we say that, like, being in your late 30s is not a big thing as two dudes in almost in their 40s. But, I mean, she's 36. Well, she'll be 37 in 3 days. I mean, she still can do this as long as she wants. I don't think she has to go anywhere. I don't think age is that much of a factor. But it's just kind of amazing to me that, because I still think of, I mean, Charlotte's been around for years, but I still think of her, like, in my mind, she's still kind of new. Like, most of them are still new. But no, they've been here for, like, 10-plus years, and they're all
for perspective, Charlotte was in the audience for her dad's retirement match against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 24. And here she is, you know, her first WrestleMania was WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. And here we are at WrestleMania 39, so... So let's move on to the surprise of the night, which is, you know, the McAfee of it all. When even the dirt sheets were reporting all week that they had no plans for McAfee.
Well, I mean, again, you put on this whole, you put Rhea and Charlotte on, you have to bring the crowd back down. Like when I knew they were going on second to last, I was like, okay, but I know they'll have a good match. I know the main event's going to be good, but you can't expect the crowd to be up for an hour and a half. Because that's what you're looking at doing when you have those two matches back to back. So they found a creative way to do it with a minimal amount of time, and it worked to perfection. So I can't really knock it. Once The Miz was out there, I'm like, okay, The Miz is super out here to kill time. Did I expect them to have a match? No. When McAfee came down, I was like, okay, so that's where we're going. Cool.
First thing that jumped to my mind was The Rock and Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 32, where he just randomly having a match to kill time. McAfee, I miss him on commentary tonight, although Graves and Cole are actually good. I love the fact they referenced that this was like the 23rd, 24th WrestleMania that Cole has been a part, has called, which is a record, because, you know, Gorilla Monsoon and JR both called about 12 each. So, like, the fact that he's doubled them both up now is pretty impressive. But, like, Cole is a McAfee guy. Like, Cole wholeheartedly, like, has talked openly about the fact that McAfee revitalized his career and made him fall in love with the business again in a new way and all that kind of stuff. And so to see him mark out when McAfee came down the same way he did at the Rumble was just kind of neat. And the way that he brought the fact that announcers are, you know, him and McAfee, the only two undefeated wrestlers at WrestleMania, you know, was kind of a neat deal.
Yeah, you can tell the excitement is genuine with him and McAfee. I was surprised about McAfee just because I know that Pat has options and the Pat has a return because a lot of people are throwing a lot of money his way that might hinder him returning in a full-time capacity.
Well, for him right now, it's the lawsuit that Brett Favre has on him. It's the show, the Pat McAfee show that he has daily on the radio and podcast. It's his wife is expecting their first child. There's just a lot going on in his life overall that is outside of the wrestling ring and outside of WWE. So it's not been a surprise to me that he's kind of like, the ESPN College Game Day thing just kind of came out of nowhere to me. Like, it didn't really seem like that was a thing that Game Day needed, considering they have David Pollack and they have, you know, Corso and Herb Street and Desmond Howard, and they have, like, a really solid crew of analysts. Like, it didn't really seem like they needed McAfee on top of it. But it kind of shores up their social media base, which is kind of a big deal for him. I also love the fact that Corey Ray just blatantly was like, yeah, great. Aaron Rodgers, you know, propaganda theorist is out here. Great. I'm sure is that a bucket in his hand? Oh, wait, he must be carrying water for Aaron Rodgers. Like, it was just great. It was really great to hear that called out on live television. But yeah, cool match, fun times. I just wish McAfee would have been on commentary, and that would have been better than, because the Rumble with him coming back and acting like he knew absolutely nothing about what had been taking place since he left was a whole lot of fun.
Right.
So let's talk about the Bloodline. We got it right. You called doing it on the Saturday night. I thought they would have done it on the Sun to open Sunday night, but they did it to close on Saturday night. Your thoughts are on the Bloodline versus Sami Zayn, the stunner and the three haluva kicks and the crowd and the end.
I think they did it right. The emotion that was shown when this was all over, the emotion that was shown like towards the end of the match, and then when Sami actually pins Jay. They showed the shot of his wife. They showed Kevin Owens sitting against the ropes, and you could tell like there's no pretending, there's no acting. That was real emotion. He's just like, you know, you could just see it on his face. It's like, we're really here. We really did this. We made event at WrestleMania. We won the titles in this big match, and I think that was the right way to go. And they told a great story in the match with what I think will be the beginning of the end of the Bloodline. And I think that's why this was important to do it tonight. And yeah, when you walk through all the scenarios, there's a risk in putting it tonight, but they were rewarded with the crowd that was super into the match, was super hot for the match. And they got invested, and everybody had some emotions when it was all said and done. So at the end of the day, that's what you want out of wrestling. That's what makes that's the best of wrestling, and they were able to do that. So I think they got it right, and this is going into their larger story, and they're staying to their larger story. So we'll see how it plays out tomorrow.
Let me say this. Kevin Owens has brought it every WrestleMania that he's like, no matter who his opponent has been, no matter whether COVID has been a thing or not, like Kevin Owens has killed it at every WrestleMania he's. Then you add in the Bloodline, and you add in the promo work that they've been doing in the last month leading up to this, and the hype surrounding it, and the closing of the show, and the entrances, and the whole deal. Like, they really made this match work. And they did a lot of really good spots. They made you question what was going to happen at just the right moments. And, I mean, I thought that they did the whole thing really, really well, concluding with three Haluva kicks and a stunner. And, like, that was the pop that you needed to end the night.
Yes, that you want every WrestleMania to end. Like, that's what they got. I think it was well worth doing it that way.
It reminded me of Austin. It reminded me of Austin and Shawn at 14, where, like, everybody knew Shawn wasn't at his best, and Austin has come out in the last month and said that was his worst WrestleMania match, was that one, because Shawn was injured at the time. But, like, everybody knew that was where they were going, and that was what they were going to do. And, you know, the JR, the memorable Jim Ross call of, you know, the Austin era has begun and all the things. But, like, that moment still resonates. Like, that is still worked on a basic fundamental level. Tyson turning on DX and on Shawn and costing the title and the whole thing. Like, I felt like that was the kind of similar thing here. Like, we knew it was coming. It was a matter of how they did it, if they could execute it well and play on our emotions, and they did. And I think they'll do the same thing again tomorrow night at the close of the show.
Yeah, tomorrow night, if they play it right, it should be bigger than tonight. Man, tonight was pretty big. It's going to be hard to top that.
Was there ever a moment in the match where you thought they might swerve?
No, not really.
You know, I found myself thinking that there's no way that Kevin's getting this. Like, anytime Kevin Owens went for a pin, I was just like, this isn't it. Like, I knew it had to be Sammy. Like, there was no way that anybody other than Sammy was. And to make it getting the pin on Jay just worked exponentially.
Yeah, because that fits into the story. Because it seems like, you know, while he's setting up for, like, the last one, he's looking at him, and he doesn't really want to do it, but he knows he has to do it. And it's like he knows doing it will, like, set him free.
Oh, you know, the Shawn Michaels Ric Flair WrestleMania 24, I'm sorry, I love you.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, except Jay wasn't just, like, willingly giving it up to die with a super kick.
No, and Jay's gonna have many more matches. I'm like old dude who took that retirement back like 10 years later. So Chad, let's wrap this podcast up with your thoughts on what lies ahead. I will go on record as saying that I will be thoroughly disappointed if we get through two nights of WrestleMania and I see neither Shane McMahon or Stephanie McMahon's tits.
You're not getting either one. You're not getting either one of those things. I think I'll stay with what I thought on our preview show. I think it'll be more chalk, and I think chalk is good.
Does chalk include Bianca going over?
That I was just about to say, I don't know what to think of that one. I think it could go either way.
Because I feel like they have the O-her for, like, previous WrestleManias where they screwed her over.
I mean, she's won the last two WrestleManias she's been in.
True, but WrestleMania 34 against Charlotte, where she was undefeated and lost her strength to Charlotte.
I forgot about that. I completely forgot.
Won
about
the
that.
Royal Rumble and lost the match at Mania.
No, she didn't. She didn't win. She only won the Rumble once.
Yeah, she won.
That's when she won the title. Oh, now I gotta look this up because I thought she only won the one Royal Rumble. Are you talking about Asuka?
Asuka, yeah.
Okay. That's true. Yeah, Asuka hasn't had the best Mania moment. So maybe my thinking is that if you put Asuka over, that probably means you're putting Bianca on SmackDown to feud with Rhea, which works. But you might want to save Rhea and Bianca until SummerSlam. Because that, I mean, I would, because that's like, I think that's your money match. So I don't know. I still can go either way on that match. I have no feeling whatsoever either way. I think it's close to time for Bianca to lose. I think Asuka's a good person to challenge and to lose to, but I can see there being like Asuka could give Bianca a good match until we get her, get the belt off of her to somebody younger in like the next couple months.
Yeah, and the match that I'm probably looking forward to the most tomorrow is Edge versus Demon Finn Balor, simply because I love that makeup job, and also because Hell in a Cell holds a very special place in my heart, especially at WrestleMania, and I'm interested to see what two old dudes decide to do with it.
I think that match should be fun, that we're calling Finn Balor old when he is literally my age. I want to tell all of y'all the kick rocks on that one. But I think that
it'll be 42 compared to 50. I mean,
yeah, I know Finn is old, even though he doesn't look it. He looks like he's still in his like early 30s. But when I think of it in comparison to Edge, because Edge there, it automatically makes me compare to Edge, and I'm like, Edge is old as crap. So Finn is clearly the young man in this equation.
Yeah, both I think will be fun matches tomorrow night. Anything else on night one of WrestleMania?
No, not really. I'm kind of blown away how the show progressed and how everything went along and how and that it was so good. It was a great show top to bottom.
The only thing missing was the pyro,
which we got at the end, and I think it missed for most of that time because it was still light outside.
Yeah, the beginning of the show does take place in light. Like it doesn't get dark until the last two matches night.
Yeah, so they instead of trying to kill time to have matches in the dark, they were smart and strategically used their pyro for the very end. It was clearly going to be night.
All right, Chad, that'll about do it for our night one recap of WrestleMania 39. We will be back tomorrow night, same bat time, same bat channel, for our WrestleMania 39 night two review after the destruction of the Bloodline. So if you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan. He is at Chad Met at the Met Theory. And our producer is at Grant L. Fletcher. Thank you very much and have a pleasant evening.